पापकरणं वन्दे गुरुमीशभक्तान् ईशम् ईशावतारकम् तत्प्रकाशम् सतच्छक्ति कृष्णचैतन्यसंज्ञकम्। I offer my respectful obeisances unto the spiritual masters, the devotees of the Lord's incarnations, his plenary portions, his energies, and the primeval Lord himself, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Bande Sri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodado Gododaye Pushpavanto Chitro Shando Tamonado. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who are like the sun and moon. They have arisen simultaneously on the horizon of Goda to dissipate the darkness of ignorance and thus wonderfully bestow benedictions upon all. What the Upanishads describe as the impersonal Brahman is but the effulgence of his body. And the Lord, known as the Supersoul, is but his localized plenary portion. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, full with six opulences. He is the absolute truth, and no other truth is greater than or equal to him. May that Lord, who is known as the son of Srimati Sachi Devi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost chambers of your heart. Resplendent with the radiance of molten gold, he has appeared in the age of Kali by his causeless mercy to bestow what no incarnation ever offered before, the most sublime and radiant spiritual knowledge of the mellow taste of his service. The loving affairs of Sri Radha and Krishna are transcendental manifestations of the Lord's internal pleasure-giving potency. Although Radha and Krishna are one in their identity, they separated themselves eternally. Now these two transcendental identities have again united in the form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. I bow down to him who has manifested himself with the sentiment and complexion of Srimati Radharani, although he is Krishna himself. Desiring to understand the glory of Radharani's love, the wonderful qualities in him that she alone relishes through her love, and the happiness she feels when she realizes the sweetness of his love, the Supreme Lord Hari, richly endowed with her emotions, appears from the womb of Srimati Sachi Devi as the moon appears from the ocean. May Sri Nityananda Ram be the object of my constant remembrance, Shankarshan, Sheshanaga, and the Vishnus who lie on the Karna ocean, Garba ocean, and the ocean of milk are his plenary portions and the portions of his plenary portions. I surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, who is known as Shankarshan in the midst of the Chaturvyuha, consisting of Basudev, Shankarshan, Prajumana, and Adiruddha. He possesses all opulences and resides in Vaikuntha Loka far beyond material creation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, whose partial representation called Karanodakshai Vishnu, lying in the Karana ocean, is the original Purusha, the master of the illusory energy and the shelter of all the universes. I offer my full obeisances unto the feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, a partial part of whom is Garbhodakshai Vishnu. From the navel of Garbhodakshai Vishnu sprouts the lotus that is the birthplace of Brahma, the engineer of the universe. The stem of that lotus is the resting place of the multitude of planets. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, whose secondary part is the Vishnu lying in the ocean of milk. That Chirodakshai Vishnu is the supersoul of all living entities and the maintainer of all the universes. Sheshanaga is a further subpart of him. Lord Advaita Acharya is the incarnation of Mahavishnu, whose main function is to create the cosmic world through the actions of Maya. Because he is non-different from Hari, the Supreme Lord, he is called Advaita, and because he propagates the cult of devotion, he is called Acharya. He is the Lord and the incarnation of the Lord's devotee. Therefore, I take shelter of him. I offer my obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Krishna, who is non-different from his features as a devotee, devotional incarnation, devotional manifestation, pure devotee and devotional energy. Glory to the all-merciful Radha and Madan Mohan. I am lame and ill-advised, yet they are my directors, and their lotus feet are everything to me. In a temple of jewels of Vrindavan, underneath a desire tree, Sri Sri Radha Govinda, served by their most confidential associates, sit upon an effulgent throne. I offer my humble obeisances unto them. Sri Srila Gopinath, who originated the transcendental mellow of the rasa dance, stands on the shore in Bamsivat and attracts the attention of the cowherd damsels with the sound of his celebrated flute. May they all confer upon us their benediction. Glory to Sri Chaitanya and Nityananda. Glory to Advaita Chandra, and glory to all the devotees of Sri Gora. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Advaita Chandra, Jaya Bola Bhakta Vrinda. In these first 18 slokas of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is offering his respectful and humble obeisances, begging for the mercy and the blessings of these various manifested features of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this way, he is revealing to us that before beginning any auspicious work, we must first very thoroughly and carefully humble ourselves to the Lord and his various merciful manifestations, and beg in a prayerful heart for their mercy. Otherwise, without receiving the empowerment of the benedictions of the Lord and his various manifestations, then we are simply at the most speaking what we have the capacity to know, which has absolutely no power to help anyone come beyond the modes of material nature. But if, by receiving the auspicious blessings of these various manifestations of the Lord, beginning with Sri Guru and the Vaishnavas, as Sri Krishna Kaviraj Goswami is explaining by his example, then we simply become instrument. We become the sound piece to broadcast the glories of the Lord as the Lord and his pure representatives desire that glorification to take place. Now, in the first 18 verses of this chapter 1 of Adi Lila, Krishnadas Kaviraj covers the most essential and important aspects of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. In nutshell, each one of these verses is packed with inconceivable and infinite power. And now, at this portion of the Adi Lila, Krishnadas Kaviraj is about to take each one of these verses and very elaborately expound upon that. Ethina Thakur Godiyake Karyachena Atmasat Ethinera Charana Bandon Tine Moranat. These three deities of Vrindavan, Madan Mohan, Govinda, and Gopinath, have absorbed the heart and soul of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, followers of Lord Chaitanya. I worship their lotus feet, for they are the lords of my heart. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita offers his respectful obeisances unto the three deities of Vrindavan, namely Sri Radha Madan Mohan, Sri Radha Govinda Dev, and Sri Radha Gopinath Ji. These three deities are the life and soul of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, who have a natural aptitude for residing in Vrindavan. the Gaudiya Vaishnavas who follow strictly in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu worship the divinity by chanting transcendental sounds meant to develop a sense of one's transcendental relationship with the Supreme Lord. A reciprocation of mellows or rasas, of mutual affection, and ultimately the achievement of the desired success in loving service. These three deities are worshipped in three different stages of one's development. The followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu scrupulously follow these principles of approach. Gaudiya Vaishnavas perceive the ultimate objective in Vedic hymns composed of 18 transcendental letters that adore Krishna as Madan Mohan, Govinda, and Gopi Janavallabha. Madan Mohan is he who charms Cupid, the god of love. Govinda is he who pleases the senses and the cows. And Gopi Janavallabha is the transcendental lover of the gopis. Krishna himself is called Madan Mohan, Govinda, Gopi Janavallabha, and countless other names as he plays in his different pastimes with his devotees. The three deities, Madan Mohan, Govinda, and Gopi Janavallabha, have very specific qualities. Worship of Madan Mohan is on the platform of reestablishing our forgotten relationship with the personality of Godhead. In the material world, we are presently in utter ignorance of our eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. Pungo refers to one who cannot move independently by his own strength. And Mandamate is one who is less intelligent because he is too absorbed in materialistic activities. It is best for such persons not to aspire for success in fruitive activities or mental speculation, but instead simply to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The perfection of life is simply to surrender to the Supreme. In the beginning of our spiritual life, we must therefore worship Madan Mohan so that he may attract us and nullify our attachment for material sense gratification. This relationship with Madan Mohan is necessary for neophyte devotees. When one wishes to render service to the Lord with strong attachment, one then worships Govinda on the platform of transcendental service. Srila Prabhupada is describing an elaboration. You see, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, in his glorification and obeisances, ends with these three beautiful and famous verses in the glorification of Madan Mohan, Govinda, and Gopinath, the three primary deities of Vrindavan. And why does he do so? Because the science of bhakti is a gradual step-by-step process of purifying our heart and awakening those natural propensities of loving devotion to Krishna. Now, at every stage of our spiritual advancement, we are utterly depending on the mercy of Krishna and how he is manifesting his mercy through the Guru, through the Vaishnavas, through the scriptures. Narottam Das Thakur has said, Hari Guru Vaishnava Bhagavad Gita. These are the four principles which must be very, very carefully understood and worshipped. If we do not worship the scripture, if we do not worship the Guru, the Vaishnavas, and Lord Hari, there will be a great deficiency in our spiritual life. And he is explaining here how each of these three most important murtis of Brajadham have a very, very specific function, a divine function, in helping the devotees to come closer to their lotus feet. Madan Mohan literally means he who attracts the mind of Cupid. And this is a very, very important name of Sri Krishna, because in this material world, everybody is under the spell of Cupid. Sometimes it is said by the acharyas, and it is also in the shastras, that this world is called Maitunga Agara, which means it is a place where everybody is shackled by the chains of desire for sex life, either gross or subtle. It is the influence It is the magical charm that motivates everyone through the repetition of birth and death, through the 8,400,000 species of life. We find even in the plants, the plant, the male plant emits some pollen. It goes into the air and falls into the female plant, or goes into the ground, another seed. In this way, even the lowest species, where there's practically unconsciousness, sex life is the most prominent factor which motivates their existence. What to speak of the animals, the insects, the birds, the fish. We constantly see that they look for some food to maintain themselves. They take some rest because they must do that also to maintain themselves. They defend themselves. That's also for maintenance. But through all that maintenance of eating, sleeping, and defending, they're all looking for pleasure. And what is the pleasure they're seeking? It is in sex life. And the population explosion here in India, it is no mystery why it is taking place, because so many people are so addicted to sex life. So, we have seen in the scriptures, and many of us have witnessed in this world, how the charm of Maya is fully manifested in the form of the opposite sex. The Bhagavatam explains that for a man, simply the raising of the eyebrow of a woman could completely conquer his mind. That is the potency that Maya manifests through the opposite sex. In fact, it is said in the Bhagavatam that the full manifestation of all the power of Maya is within the opposite sex. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained in this way that when a woman comes to serve you, you should know that it is like a deep, dark well covered by beautiful, fresh grasses. It appears like a very, very comfortable, wonderful place to sit. But when you sit there, you fall deep down. And you're so down that when you call out for help, nobody can hear you. Of course, we're speaking in this connection of not the concept of devotional service, but that power and attraction of Maya that is working through the opposite sex to entrap you, to create total bondage in your heart, to create a longing, a thirst for physical pleasure. And it is described that Cupid is the director of the affairs of these attractions in this world. And symbolically, it is sometimes explained how Cupid, when he shoots his arrow into your heart, how you just become completely enamored. And he's constantly shooting arrows in everybody's hearts. So therefore, the beginning of spiritual life means we have to divert our attention, divert our attraction away from the impulses of sex and toward Krishna, toward the loving, the selfless service of God. And this is very, very difficult, as anyone living in this world has experienced. So how is it done? Cupid is so powerful, and we are so insignificant that factually we do not have the strength to overcome or withstand her attacks. Therefore, we must learn the art of taking shelter of Krishna. We must learn how to become attracted to Krishna and allow Krishna to steal our consciousness away from Maya. One of the great names of Lord Sri Krishna is Hari. Hari means one who steals all auspiciousness from one's heart. one inauspicious, one steals all of one's inauspiciousness from one's heart. And what is inauspicious? Material desire, sex desire, Cupid's influence. That is the only inauspicious thing in our life. When we take shelter and fix our consciousness on Lord Hari, he removes, steals away all these inauspicious attachments and replaces it with loving attachment to him. So as you know, the beginning of spiritual life is sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means following regulative principles. It means being strict. You cannot make any spiritual advancement unless you are very strict. Srila Prabhupada would so many times condemn so-called gurus who did not teach very strict principles. Like, for instance, in America, there was in the 1960s, there was a very, very, very famous guru from India who was selling mantras. And when people would ask Prabhupada, I remember a CBS television reporter asked Prabhupada, "What do you think of these gurus?" He said, "Which gurus?" "As far as I know, all of the gurus coming from India are bogus rascals, and I say that, and you can quote me officially. Which guru are you talking about?" And he said, "Well, there is that one very famous who teaches meditation." And Prabhupada said, he sells mantras for $35, and he tells his disciples they can do whatever they want. There's no question of spiritual advancement through this process. Spiritual advancement means following the laws of God, which means no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. He said, "We will not accept anyone within our institution unless they are willing to follow these principles." So sadhana bhakti means strict, regulated, obedience. And how do we get the power for this? We have to pray. We have to beg for the mercy. Because Madan Mohan is particularly and specifically that form of Sri Krishna, of Vrindavan, that gives one engagement in the process of sadhana bhakti. And through the practice of sadhana bhakti, we are appealing for the mercy, for the grace of Madan Mohan, and through that process, that initial attraction for him awakens in our heart. The stealing of our mind away from the temptations and the allurements of Maya gradually take place. So therefore, this is the beginning of our spiritual life. The beginning of spiritual life, of course, as Kaviraj Goswami is about to explain, is to associate with devotees and then accept a spiritual master. But the spiritual master teaches us first how to worship Madan Mohan. Perhaps he doesn't explain that we are worshipping Madan Mohan, but the process of sadhana bhakti, the process of developing that initial contact, is the appeal for the mercy of Sri Madan Mohan. And then Prabhupada is explaining here that when one wishes to render service to the Lord with strong attachment, one worships Govinda. Strong attachment is very significant. What is being explained here is after worshipping Madan Mohan, after following the principles of sadhana bhakti, not that we have any strong attachment, we just have an intelligent understanding of what we really want in life. We don't want to suffer anymore. We want something great. We want God. We want Krishna's mercy in our life. And through the process of sadhana bhakti, we may not have much strong attachment at all. But gradually that attachment becomes more and more, and detachment from Maya becomes more and more. And with that strong attachment, when we enter into the realm of spontaneous devotion, then we worship Govinda. Because Govinda is he who gives the ultimate pleasure to the mind, to the senses. Govinda, one who gives pleasure to senses. And in this process of worshipping with strong attachment, with spontaneous devotion, Govinda is the reservoir of all pleasures. when by the grace of Krishna and the devotees one reaches perfection in devotional service, he can appreciate Krishna as Gopijana Ballabha, the pleasure deity of the damsels of Braja. So the worship of Gopinath is the highest, the ultimate stage of transcendental realization. After worshipping Krishna with strong attachment, gradually pure love of God awakens within our heart. And in that state, Gopinath is the presiding deity of our life. Gopinath means Lord of the Gopis. Gopijana Ballabha means one who is beloved by all of the Gopis. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained this mode of devotional service in three stages. And therefore, these worshipable deities are installed in Vrindavan by different Goswamis. They are very dear to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas who visit the temples at least once a day. Besides the temples of these three deities, many other temples have been established in Vrindavan, such as the temple of Radha Damodar of Jiva Goswami, the temple of Sham Sundar of Shamananda Goswami, the temple of Gokulananda of Lokanath Goswami, and the temple of Radharaman of Gopal Pat Goswami. There are seven principal temples over 400 years old that are the most important of the 5,000 temples now existing in Vrindavan. So these three principles we must very, very carefully understand. First is Sambandha. Second is Abhideha. Abhideha. And third is Prayojana. Why should we understand this very carefully? Because according to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the Vedic literatures are simply expoundments on these three principles. Sambandha is to reestablish our lost relationship with Krishna through the process of sadhana bhakti, by learning from the bona fide spiritual master how to attach our minds and our senses to Krishna and simultaneously detach our mind and senses from the temptations and allurements of Maya. And Madan Mohan is the predominant deity who is in control of this process of Sambandha. And through sadhana bhakti, we receive the causeless mercy of Madan Mohan and awaken our divine attachment for his lotus feet and detachment from the influence of the temptations of this world. The next principle, which is explained in Vedic literature, is Abhideha. Abhideha means in an advanced state of consciousness, when our heart begins to become purified, when faith and strong attachment to Krishna awakens in our heart, then we simply engage in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord with all of our energy and life. This is the secondary process of purification. Rupa Goswami explains that the process of purification, and please take note of this, is called sadhana bhakti. And sadhana bhakti is categorized into two principles. One is Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti means tapasya, sambandha, strictly obeying, even if you have no taste. I would like to sleep all day, but I rise for Mangal Arati because it is the order of my guru. I would like to eat all nonsense any time of the day, but I only eat special type of Krishna prasad at certain times of the day because it is the order of my guru. I chant for 2 hours every day, eat whether I like it or I hate it, because it is the order of my guru. This is Vaidhi Bhakti, discipline. There's no attraction necessarily, but there is obedience. And the second stage in this process of sadhana bhakti is raga bhakti. Raga bhakti means, through the purification of perhaps many, many years of Vaidhi bhakti, we awaken a spontaneous attraction for Krishna's service. We care nothing anymore for material life. When Maya attacks us, we spit at the thought of what she's offering us. When it's time for Mangal Arati, it's no longer an austerity. It's the greatest joy of our life to run to the temple to see the beautiful form of the deity and to dance before him. When it's time for japa, we just have a thirst for tasting the sweetness of the holy name. It's no longer a discipline, but it's the spontaneous nature of our mind and senses in this purified state to simply taste Krishna and serve Krishna. And this Raga Marg, or Raga Bhakti, Raga Nuga Bhakti it is called officially, Raga Nuga Bhakti. This stage of devotional service is predominated by Govinda. And this is called by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Abhideya. And by continuing on in this type of service to the Lord, further purification takes place. The example by Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is just like when you have milk and you put it on a fire, you boil it down. And actually he uses sugar if you take, if you take milk and sugar and you start to cook it down, at first it starts evaporating. This is like the process of sambandha, Vaidhi Bhakti. Later on, it becomes very thick, very dense, very rich, very sweet. That is like the condensed milk. That is like Abhideha. And if you keep cooking it, it will become like rock candy. It will become solidified. That is prayojanam, pure love of God. Through the process of keeping one's mind and senses engaged in the loving service, through the process of abhideya, gradually love of God awakens in our heart. And in that state of love of God, our constitutional position in relationship to Krishna is gradually manifested. Where in whatever situation we are, anywhere in creation, we are simply serving Krishna according to our Siddha Deha, or our eternal relationship with the Lord, Siddha Swarup. Whether you are a cowherd boy, whether you are a gopi, whether you are a cow, even in this world, you're conscious that you're serving Krishna in that rasa. Internally, although externally you may have so many responsibilities. Now this is a very, very advanced platform of consciousness. There are some so-called gurus or acharyas or babajis who will tempt you in this way. I can give you the Siddha Pranali initiation, which means I will tell you in confidence what your eternal relationship with Krishna is in Goloka Vrindavan. And if you meditate on that in your heart, keep that meditation going in your heart, and express through your daily activities what that meditation is, then you will awaken your original spiritual body. But according to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, this is a very, very, very offensive approach to God, because it is for those persons who are already totally purified. Rather than beginning on the process of sadhana bhakti, vaidhi bhakti, and then going through the process of abhideha or raganuga bhakti, and becoming extremely and intensely purified of all material desires, and when love of God begins to awaken in your heart, then the Guru reveals to you your eternal relationship with Krishna, either through the heart or through some initiation. But to simply take someone who still is succumbing to lust and anger and greed, such an initiation, such a meditation on our Siddha Deha in Vrindavan, is simply an imagination. There's no purification. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that the only initiation necessary is Harinam initiation, the chanting of the holy name. Because through the process of the holy name, and through following the order of the spiritual master as a menial and humble servant, gradually you'll become purified, and naturally your eternal loving relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world will be revealed. So you should be very careful. Prabhupada was very strict on this point. And especially here in India, our devotees should know this. Because some of our devotees would visit Vrindavan, and sadhus would tell, sometimes Goswami caste or Babaji's, our devotees would meet them, and he would say, "Oh, your Guru Maharaj, he is giving you very good things. He is giving you Harinam. He is giving you the deity worship, but he's not telling you everything. There's more to be told. He is not giving you the Siddha Pranali, which is necessary for entrance into the realm of Goloka. He is not telling you, he is not revealing to you your Siddha Swarup, your perfect form of the spiritual world." And of course, devotees would become, "Oh, really? I didn't know that. My guru never taught me that. Please tell me." They would give him this initiation. "You are this. Meditate like this throughout the day." When Prabhupada heard this, he was very angry. "Your spiritual lives will be destroyed by these people." It is called sahajiya, taking things cheaply. In fact, one of our devotees, he was a sannyasi. He was living in Vrindavan. And he received the Siddha Pranali initiation. Now, in the Gaudiya Vaishnava literatures, we find that this Siddha Pranali initiation is there. But it's for those who are on a very, very intensely purified platform. It's not required. It will automatically be revealed. But sometimes in the circles of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we find people like Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, them and their gurus, they were nitya siddhas. These initiations would take place. But this is for those persons who are on the stage of pure love of God. It's simply to further develop their relationship with Krishna on the level of pure love of God. It's never to be dealt with by neophytes, or even advanced neophytes. So this one sannyasi, a Gaudiya Vaishnav, he told him, "Your guru is not telling you everything. I can tell you what is your relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world." So he gave him an initiation. And he revealed to him that you are a peacock, and that you should meditate throughout the day on these various services that you as a peacock have with Radha and Krishna in Goloka. And he explained to him what his particular services in Goloka as a peacock. So one day he was in his personal quarters as sannyasi, and another devotee happened to walk in. And this devotee was walking around like this. And he said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm practicing." "What are you practicing?" "I'm practicing to go back to Godhead." "Well, what does going like this, moving your neck in so many ways, have to do with practicing?" He says, "Because it has been revealed to me by a very great Babaji that I am a peacock in Goloka Vrindavan, and I should meditate on being a peacock and serving Krishna in this way." And when this was told to Srila Prabhupada, he explained to this devotee that you have so many bad habits. What is the question of trying to understand what is your relation? Even if it is true, it's simply a useless imagination to you. Prabhupada said, he said, "I never want any of my devotees to ever associate with these people. They will spoil everything and make us just take everything cheaply." That is what sahajya means, to take everything cheaply. To think we can have entrance into such high leelas when we can't even control our senses. That is sahajya. And Prabhupada considered that one of the greatest enemies here in India. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said there are three enemies. The sahajyas, who are trying to get our devotees to just take everything so cheaply. And I won't mention the other. So one was the Smarta Brahmins. The Smarta Brahmins who were this ridiculous caste consciousness that is trying to exclude people who are sincerely trying to surrender their lives from the Vedic system because they don't have a particular birth. They should not have sacred threads. They should not take sannyas. They can't do it because they're not born in my land. And the other, of course, was his god brothers who he considered envious of him, who were trying to steal his disciples away. So, of course, we must be very, very careful not to fall victim to these three categories. Vaishnavas, they're actually all devotees. We should not criticize them, we should not condemn them, but we should not intimately associate with these types of people because they can only divert our attention from the real path, the true path of devotional service. So this particular devotee I was telling you about, the peacock, I know him quite well. He was actually a very good sannyasi, and he was actually a very, very wonderful preacher. And then he got mixed up in all of this, and he just, rather than just being a simple, humble devotee following the basic principles of sadhana bhakti, as Prabhupada was explaining to him, he was so diverted by these higher realms of thought that the conclusion was he left his sannyasi vows, he left Krishna consciousness, he found several girlfriends, and later on got married and stopped chanting Hare Krishna. He was always finding faults with Vaishnavas and suffered like a dog for about 10 years, and suffered so bad he completely forgot about being a peacock. He was simply thinking about eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. He was too busy with these thoughts to meditate on his peacock leela. And I remember he was suffering so bad, he realized what an offense and mistake he made to his spiritual master. And he actually came to New Vrindavan for some time to surrender. Of course, after Prabhupada left the planet. Actually, I traveled together with him. We were traveling and preaching together, and he was just trying to be a real simple, humble devotee again. And he told me what happened. He told me the whole story, how he got tricked in this situation, and he got diverted from the mercy of his own Guru Maharaj. I'd like to play you the tape. One devotee named Advaita Acharya, very wonderful devotee.
been at New Vrindavan since 1973. He was sitting across from Prabhupada. Prabhupada was in a garden sitting on his Vyasasana. I remember I was, by God's grace, I was sitting just about 5 feet from Prabhupada's lotus foot. I was there every night just looking up at him. And Advaita, I was on the side of Prabhupada and Advaita was right in front of him. And there was about maybe 15, 20 devotees sitting several hours every night who were just talking to Prabhupada and asking questions. And Advaitacharya said, Srila Prabhupada, I would like to understand what is Siddha Deha. And Prabhupada just cut him off like a lion. He was so concerned with this mentality. And he spoke, "You have so many bad qualities. What is the question of you having any understanding or conception of Siddha Deha?" He said, "First you learn to purify your heart. First you learn to follow these principles. Don't even talk, don't even think about Siddha Deha." And Prabhupada went on and on and on, chastising this devotee for even mentioning it. Because Prabhupada knows how this sahaja mentality of trying to take an advanced position in Krishna consciousness, to take things so cheaply, is such a deadly enemy to our spiritual progress. And that is why Srila Prabhupada actually did not want devotees going to Vrindavan and just mixing with Babaji's and mixing with devotees without being able to discriminate who's who. Prabhupada wanted his devotees, if you go to Vrindavan, you should go under the supervision of devotees who are very mature and very sober. Otherwise, you meet these people and they will start making you think that your guru is not teaching you everything. Your guru is teaching you preliminary, neophyte information, but I can give you entrance into the higher realms. And there are so many like this. In Prabhupada's letters, can show you. In Los Angeles, some devotees who were Sanskrit scholars, they started a club called Gopi Bhava Club. And actually, I knew some of these people very well. And Prabhupada said in one letter, he was saying, "This is nonsense. This will ruin our movement. This is all cheap." And then he said, "It is because without my permission or consent, they went to live at Radha Kund, and they were associating with many of these Babaji's at Radha Kund who completely spoiled their consciousness by giving them this misconception that they can enter into these higher realms of Gopi Bhava meditation." And I'll tell you, of these devotees who are in the Gopi Bhava Club, except two of them, all the rest of them are not even following the regular principles or even in a Krishna consciousness movement of any sort right now. Prabhupada went to Los Angeles and very, very heavily was attacking this conception. And some of them were arguing. Some of them were literally arguing with Prabhupada that these men are giving us something higher. And by meditation and these higher meditations, we will become purified. Prabhupada said, "You will become putrefied." And the result is that they all fell down, except those few who really, really surrendered to Prabhupada and understood they made a mistake and with tears in their eyes begged forgiveness. Those devotees are very strong, wonderful devotees to this day. So therefore, this is very important. I'm sorry I've talked so long. I think this point must be really in India, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given these three stages, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. We cannot immediately think we have entrance into the Gopi Jana Ballava stage of the love of the gopis. We must first worship Madan Mohan until all material desires are cleared from our heart. Then we worship Govinda through the process of Abhideha until that crystal, that crystalline love manifests within our heart. Then we worship Gopijana Ballabha. Then, in that stage of ultra-purified consciousness, do we come to the platform of Prema Bhakti, where our eternal relationship with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan is revealed. We'll stop here for today. And tomorrow, we will begin Kaviraj's explanations of these verses. And, of course, he will begin by the remembrance and worship of the spiritual master. Tomorrow, beginning tomorrow, the most important of our classes will be. These first 2 days, we have been reading we have given a historical explanation of some of the background of Chaitanya Charitamrita yesterday. Today, we went through the entire introduction of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Tomorrow we will begin Kaviraj Goswami's in-depth study, analysis, and explanation of each verse within this beautiful introduction. So, for now, I would like us all to study from the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Simply talking about topic amongst everybody, what Krishna was wearing, what type of garland he had, what type of jewelry he had, how Balaram was holding his plow. That's all we talked about. Either we're working or we're talking about the duty. You should have that consciousness. We're talking all day long. We either talk about, there's only two topics all day long. Either discussing or discussing how the deities go. Whenever we meet, this should be the topic of our discussion. Repeat some of the highlights of these 5 pages. Repeat some of the highlights of what we were talking about regarding not being sahajas and like that. Madan Mohan, Gopina. These three principles, Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayodana, you go very deeply into understanding these three principles. Madan Mohan, Govinda, Gopinath. We should discuss it amongst each other. We should reflect it. Just repeat what we've heard and ask someone to help you understand how they've understood it. Ashram will be so spiritually charged by consciousness. Not just at certain times of the day. At certain times of the day we get charged, and for the rest of the day we should be keeping that charge in contact through our relationships. So now, do you know who was knocking on the door? What we specifically should be hearing for our purification. And we should thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly study, understand the Prabhupada, God's books, the books of our own family movement. And then we can read other books for not for our purification so much, but for further reference, for further understanding. That is very good. But first let us master what Gurudev has given us. Prabhupada gave no importance to any books except Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Nectar of Devotion, and Nisha Upanishad. Why did he give no... If devotees were reading Gaudiya Math books, he didn't say they were bona fide, he said they were important. They were reading other Mahabharata, he said it's not important. Why isn't it important? Because until you understand the grasp of my purports, you'll never understand. It's all sense gratification reading these other books. Scrutinizing, we studied all of Prabhupada's books. No. He said that this is all sense gratification reading Mahabharata. reading these Gaudiya Math books, or not even Gaudiya Math, but even the Gaudiya Vaishnav books, these Brijabasi books and everything. I mean, we're not criticizing, we're not saying they're unauthorized. Some are unauthorized, some aren't. We have to have that discrimination, not by our own selves, but we have to have leaders to tell us what books are authorized and what are not. Some are the writings of Sahajis, they will divert your attention. Some are really genuine works of devotion. But until we really learn how to understand Krishna consciousness through the purports and the translations of Prabhupada's books, studying these other books is really, it's just for enjoyment, it's for sense gratification. We're not going to really benefit very much. That is why we need a guru to teach us how to be Krishna conscious. Our guru is teaching us through his books how to be Krishna conscious. Let us thoroughly understand these matters first. Never criticize others. Offer all respects. See those Puranas. But really, for every 10 hours I read Prabhupada books, I might read 15 minutes of the Puranas. Because it gives some background information for preaching, which is very good, and for my own understanding. So we should have at least this ratio. And this should be the ratio after we complete all the books. Then we'll be reading them again and again and again with this ratio. But before we've read all the books, we should just stick to our guru's words. That is the straight path back to God. Even Brahma Samhita is written by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. For the first so many years, Prabhupada told us not to read it. Read his books. And then after he felt his devotees have sufficiently read his books, then he told them to print Brahma Samhita. Now you can understand this writing.
That is so heavy. I can't understand anything
about it. Prabhupada wrote his books for us personally. Bhakti Siddhanta, his English writings were for the highest level scholars and philosophers of Britain and Germany. Huh? He had to use big, big words just to impress them that the Vaishnavas were not just sentimentalists. Because that was, he did that as a technique. Because amongst the common people of the West never took interest in Vedic knowledge. But the scholars did. But they crossed off the Vaishnavas as just being sentimentalists. They're just chanting and dancing. And therefore they considered that the real substance of the Vedantic school is the Shankarites, the Vedantists, the monists, because they speak very deeply philosophical. And the Vaishnavas, they're just singing and dancing. They're sentimentalists. They're below the dignity of our scholarly research. So Bhakti Siddhanta wrote these deep, deep philosophical translations, really, of Jiva Goswami's purports, and in his own way, and he did it in such highly scholarly vocabulary that when these British scholars and these German scholars would pick up one of his books, they would say, my God, this man is not a sentimentalist, this man is a profound, erudite scholar, a master of language, a master of philosophy. And then they really, really took what he said seriously. Several became his disciples. So in other words, he was preaching according to time and circumstance. And in his Bengali writings, they're more easily understood by Bengali people. Because he was writing to the basic people in the masses. Huh? And also scholars. But his English writings, he knew that the people who are going to be reading his English are these puffed up jnanis. And he had to prove the dignity of the Vaishnava school. My God, he really did it. And most of us, we don't really have the capacity to understand his words.
One paragraph, one sentence.
For most of us, the only way to really study Bhakti Siddhanta's books is you have to have a dictionary right next to you and you have to be referring to it about almost every sentence. So, 10:30 tomorrow. We'll actually start the kirtan a little early, so we